This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Perhaps the funniest feature on Saturday Night Live lately is the cartoon series called TV Funhouse. My guest is the creator, writer, and producer of TV Funhouse, Robert Smigel. He used to be a sketch writer on Saturday Night Live. He created the sketches Da Bears, Trekkies, and the McLaughlin and Sinatra Group. Smigel also wrote for Dana Carvey's short-lived TV show and was the original head writer and co-producer on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Many of Smigel's Saturday Night Live cartoons are absurdist political satires, like his cartoon Ex-Presidents, in which the four ex-presidents are superheroes with superpowers. Smigel parodies Batman and Robin in his cartoon series The Ambiguously Gay Duo. Here's the theme song, written by Smigel.
The Ambiguously Gay Duo. Fighting all pride to save the day. They're extremely close in an ambiguous way. They're ambiguously gay. They're ambiguously gay. The ambiguously gay duo.
The ambiguously gay duo.
Robert Smigel, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
What inspired the ambiguously gay duo?
I got very irritated when Batman and Robin started having nipples on their uniforms. This bothered me to a great degree. The third Batman, I think, they started sprouting nipples.
This is the Batman movies you're talking about?
Yeah, the Batman movies. The Batman TV show is untouchable classic. But the Batman movies, in yet another attempt to separate themselves as, and comment on, that this is the 90s Batman. Batman's got nipples now. Why? What's the use of? What do we need this for? And it recalled, these are superheroes. Why do we have to, why do we have to care about their sexuality? And I got the idea for the ambiguously gay duo, sort of from that. It was just, to me, the funniest characters in the ambiguously gay duo are the bad guys, because for people who haven't seen it, the basic joke is that these guys are. Very masculine superheroes. They've got very impressive pectorals and the requisite sprouting nipples. But at the same time, the bad guys, all they can ever talk about and think about is just whether or not these two guys are gay. And any little sign, however ambiguous, produces a suspicious look from these badly animated characters. And that's basically the center of the cartoon. And I just don't understand why people, have to be so obsessed with sexuality that it spreads to something as basic as a crime fighter.
One of the things I find funny about the ambiguously gay duo is that everybody is always playing this guessing game. Like, I don't know. You think he's gay? You think she's a lesbian?
Exactly.
So you've nailed that whole game. Because that's all the bad guys really care about is, I don't know, you think they're really gay?
Exactly. People are obsessed with whether or not you're gay or not nowadays. And it just shows that as far as we think we've come, we haven't come far at all, because... If you really didn't care if someone was gay, if you really tolerated that person's sexual preference, it wouldn't be an issue. So rather than so the cartoon makes a very important social point.
I think I think the costumes on the superhero pals are funny too, because you've taken the basic, tights and briefs costume and
that's
elaborated in such
a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it. We've elaborated. We've given them very bright colors, bright pastels, and we've where the requisite bulges exist. We've taken it a little too far.
I want to ask you about another cartoon you've done for Saturday Night Live, and this is another superhero cartoon, but it's called Ex-Presidents.
Yeah.
Describe the premise of this.
That's probably, the ex-presidents are the four surviving ex-presidents, and basically they've been hit by radiation, and they have superpowers, and it's just nonsense, but I have so much fun writing those. And basically the most fun, the best part of it is that they all get to be, kick-ass Dirty Harry kind of heroes. So basically it's sort of a joke on the way we sort of boil down our leaders into sound bites and, you know, just turn them into icons, and nobody really knows anything beyond like the few sound bites that they ultimately leave us with that are so George Bush will right before he's about to beat up a villain, he'll say, "Read my lips, your ass is grass." And Ronald Reagan will say, you know, "Just say no to pissing me off."
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just pure silliness. I just love writing those.
At the end of an ex-president's episode in which they've fought off the nuclear terror.
Yes.
they kind of get together in this Partridge Family type band and sing a Brotherhood song.
That's right.
What inspired that?
It's really just inspired by all the shows I grew up with where, I guess the groundbreakers were the Archies. Really, a lot of popular music traces back to the Archies. Music videos, they were the first to do that. I mean, with all the imagery, the flowers and the... I'd been wanting to parody that for a long time. We actually did something on Conan once where we did something called Conan Babies, because there was a trend in Saturday morning cartoons to turn everything into the baby version. There was Muppet Babies and the Young Roseanne, and even Roseanne did it, like Roseanne as a little girl, as if that's not going to scare children either. But I guess they just, some genius tested it and decided that kids like to see themselves, and, you know, like Bugs Bunny's too old. He's got to have a little, he's 4 years old. The last four generations of children are crazy to like Bugs Bunny at the age of 20. So we did something called Conan Babies, and at the end, you know, I made the writer add a moment where they had a band, these, you know, three babies. So I just love that device so I used it again in the ex-presidents. And of course, they don't sound like themselves. They sound like the Archies when they sing, which is very important. Suddenly the impressions go away. And
why don't we hear the ex-presidents singing?
Cool.
Robert Smigel, are you one of the voices in that song?
No, we actually really did get the original Archies. They were all available.
No, you wish.
You're right. I could never get the real Archies. No, but we got people to just imitate the Archies dead on for us.
Okay. Robert Smigel is my guest, and he does those TV Funhouse short cartoons for Saturday Night Live, and we expect him back for the new season. And Robert Smigel, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
This is Fresh Air. Back with Robert Smigel, who does those short cartoons for Saturday Night Live, TV Funhouse. And he's also written for the Dana Carvey Show. He wrote for the Conan O'Brien Show, wrote also for Saturday Night Live, including creating the sketch The Bears. You first started working for Saturday Night Live back in, I think it was 1985, as a writer.
That's right.
I guess your most famous sketch is The Bears.
Well, the Bears sketch was something that... I lived in Chicago for 3 years before I got the Saturday Night Live job. I was in an improv group. I was taking classes. It's a great, great city. Not just in general, it's a great city. It's a really great city to start out in comedy because there's a huge community of people there. But I'm a huge sports fan, and Chicago is, I got to say, it's the best sports town in the country. They have the most devoted fans I've ever seen, and great ballparks. But with that devotion, I think comes a certain level of insanity, and so I took that a little bit further, and I also sort of noticed a look that I, you know, had never seen anywhere else but in Chicago, which is this kind of walrus mustache. It's a very macho very macho. You know, it's the city of big shoulders, and it takes itself very seriously that way. So a lot of these guys are really burly, and, you know, they've worked out a lot. They can barely bend their arms, you know. And then there's sort of a cross between that and then the really fat guys who just pride themselves on their beer guts. And at the same time, they've all got these walrus Mike Ditka kind of mustaches. So I just sort of picked up on all of this, and I picked up on the accent there, which is one of my favorite accents in the country. And I just took that, and the Bears, just sort of an arrogant attitude. It's going to happen. They're going to win. The Bears. No problem.
Now, before you started working on television, you worked briefly as a stand-up comic. Give us a taste of your early material.
Oh, my God.
Put you on the spot.
Boy. Well, one thing that I used to do, this was about 1981 or something. I was, like, in college, and I was a huge Andy Kaufman fan. Steve Martin and Andy Kaufman. Because they were, you know, growing up, I was really not into stand-up comedy. I wasn't into the talking head thing. And these guys came out in the 70s and were sort of doing the modern art version of comedy. It was comedy about comedy, commenting on itself. And I just was just overwhelmed by it. And Andy Kaufman in particular at this time. And so I would come out and I would do one of those bits that sort of, you know, you sort of dare the audience to start laughing after a while. It was, it's so ridiculous. I would come out in full Orthodox rabbi regalia, and I would be holding a giant prayer book. And I just started very, you know, I wouldn't say a word, wouldn't look at the audience, just very deliberately started turning the pages by licking my tongue, licking my finger with my tongue, you know, very slowly and deliberately, like I'm trying to find the right page. Just like the old men in synagogue, I would always see them doing when I was a kid. And then after a while, I wore a beard in this thing that was made out of cotton candy. And so after about 30 seconds of turning the pages until the audience started laughing, then I'd wait for that to die down just a little bit. And then I would slowly start, the rhythmic movement of turning the pages would start incorporating, taking a little bit of the cotton candy and eating it. so he would slowly start eating his beard at the same time. And, you know, but never acknowledging the audience. And that would go for about 2 minutes, and it would work. When I had a good crowd, that would work.
Where would you go, like on a good night, when you're getting a good reaction, where would you go after that, when you were done eating the beard?
Well, every now and then I would take it even further. I would, at one point the rabbi would notice that there really is an audience out there. So he would pull out a tape recorder and start playing music. And then he'd go back to licking, you know, and the music would be something inane, like incidental music from My Three Sons or something. It would just play over and over. Da 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 da. Dun, da, dun, da, just the least entertaining thing that you could choose. And the rabbi would just, he's like, okay, that takes care of that problem, back to work. And you just keep turning the page. And then, you know, eventually I would stop doing it, and then I would do, then I would go into like a more conventional act.
It must just demolish your ego in a night when it's not going well and people are jeering you.
I'm not good with getting my ego demolished in general. So I had trouble bombing. It would really kill me, and I didn't have the confidence and strength to just go out there every night at 2 a.m. and just pull myself up and okay, we're gonna, you know, next week 1:30. I just
okay, time for another TV Funhouse cartoon that you do. And this is fun with real audio. And basically, what you do for this is take actual sound from other TV shows, whether it's a presidential speech that's been broadcast or an interview on one of the news magazines, And you create cartoon versions of the real characters who are speaking. You use the real audio, and then you have
That's
like
right.
bizarre visual shenanigans happening behind all of this. One of my favorites is Clinton giving his State of the Union address to Congress. Why don't you describe what happens in this one?
That's one of my favorites. I actually had it actually aired like 3 days after the real one, and people asked me, how did you do that? Well, I took the State of the Union address from the previous year and animated to that because I knew that Clinton would say the same kind of platitudes basically every year and that there'd be some things that the Republicans would like and some things that the Democrats would like. So I basically heightened the partisan reactions that you get at those things. So instead of the Democrats sort of sitting while the Republicans stand and cheer, I would have the Republicans sort of dancing on their chairs and doing the Macarena. Meanwhile, Ted Kennedy is like visibly angry at the welfare cuts. And so he throws a bottle of whiskey at Clinton. And you know, it spills on in front of Newt Gingrich, who sort of surreptitiously starts lapping it up as Clinton continues his speech. And then Sonny Bono throws a chair at Al Gore, and Gore doesn't respond at all because he's made of stone. And then Newt Gingrich sort of curiously whacks him with the chair as Clinton continues.
Still getting no response.
Still getting no response. And then by the end, Larry King's talking to a giant rabbit.
Are we basically watching your thought balloons when you watch television?
Every now and then that happens. I confess, one of my creepiest thought balloons happened when I watched Diane Sawyer interviewing Mark Furman, and for some reason there was just a wealth of these one-on-one interviews with the OJ participants, and it was always a knockout newscaster interviewing one of these creepy guys, and my thought balloon was, what if Mark Furman just started clumsily hitting on Diane Sawyer as he was answering these questions? So that begat an entire cartoon in which Furman hits on Diane Sawyer, then Barbara Walters is interviewing Robert Kardashian, and she starts hitting on him, which Barbara Walters didn't like at all, I have to say. And then finally Johnny Cochran hits on Katie Couric and succeeds. Because Johnny Cochran always wins. That rascal.
What other reactions have you gotten from some of the real people who you've caricatured in your cartoons?
Well, the only one who didn't like what I did that I heard from was Barbara Walters, mm-hmm. who stopped sending the show research. Sherry O'Terry, an actress on the show, does a very funny Barbara Walters impression and does it frequently on the show, and they would always send us research from 2020 for her to use, and they stopped after that cartoon because Barbara objected to the fact that, why am I the one not being hit on? And, what can I say? It's comedy. And Tom Snyder, who you would think would like any attention, played the entire cartoon I did of him on his show. He played it in its entirety, and it was just, it wasn't any personal attack on Tom Snyder. It was totally innocuous, but it was. In that cartoon, I basically took a Tom Snyder Dolly Parton interview and had him, every question and answer was in a different location, and the point was that Tom Snyder was stalking Dolly Parton.
Exactly, right.
All over town. and calling her late at night while he's pouring hot wax on his thigh. And so I'm watching this being played. Tom Snyder's setting it up, and it's just me, and I'm interviewing Dolly, and, take a look. I think you'll like it. And then it comes back, and the last image is Tom Snyder in jail being hit on by a 400-pound white guy being kissed gently on the neck from his jail cell as he's wrapping up the show. And then, that dissolves out, and you just cut to Tom Snyder's real face, and you just hear, his crew laughing, and he's just, it was so bizarre.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Oh. But God bless him. He doesn't pretend. He announced on that show, if anybody thinks that I would be mad about these people taking our audio and without permission, and I just want NBC to know that anytime they want to use any part of my show, feel free to rebroadcast it. Anything you want. I could use all the promotion I can get.
Well, does anybody give you a hard time about copyright?
Because
no. You're basically stealing signals from TV shows.
Well, God bless Larry Flint, because Larry Flint, altered the, created this precedent in the parody laws that allows us to do. This falls under this falls under fair use,
mm-hmm.
which means that as long as it's clearly parody, we can take anything. And I had no idea. The very first one I did was Larry King and Ross Perot, and I had them call Larry King for permission because I never assumed I could just steal stuff. And Larry King said no, and I thought that was the end of the whole bit. I thought we'd never get to do it, but the NBC lawyers came in and saved the day and, told me all about Larry Flint.
Well, Robert Smigel, I look forward to a new season of your cartoons, and I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Robert Smigel is the creator of the TV Funhouse cartoons on Saturday Night Live. Next week, we're going to end the Fresh Air summer season with a whole week of comedy, interviews with comedy writers and performers.